I've launched campaigns and picked keywords. I've got my bits, set placements too. Now bad mistakes, I've made a few. I've had my share of wrong keywords, but I've gone through. We are the PPC, then, my friend.
Jake, fellow Austinite, how are you doing today? Welcome back to the show.
I'm doing good, Mike. Yeah, thanks for having me on again. I'm excited to be on. Like I said just a little bit ago before we started recording, I got the awesome hat that you're wearing. I should have wore it today. But yeah, nonetheless, thanks for having me on.
Oh, yeah. I love this behind-the-scenes look into the Jungle Scout Studios as well.
Yes.
You've got tons of equipment. Awesome to see. You look like you're the only one there, too.
Yeah, this is the disorganized mess behind the camera. In front of the camera, it looks all pretty. Behind the camera, it's a, yeah, disorganized mess. But yeah, it's nice and empty, quiet here.
Yeah, yeah. Jake, you do something every couple years, I believe, at Jungle Scout, where you guys do something really interesting, where you basically go from, you know, 0 to 100, launching a product in front of people and documenting it along the way. And truthfully, I remember when I was starting my digital marketing career, one thing that really turned the gears for me was, like, I was really interested in doing like Google SEO, and I found someone who was like documenting their journey to like rank for particular keywords on Google. And it was super duper valuable for me to see that progress. So shout out to, that was Sean Ogle, one of my early inspirations to get into the world of digital marketing. And it was really cool to see. So a lot of times the Amazon space can be a little like, oh, I don't want to tell you what I sell or this, that, or the other thing. So it's cool to see you guys do that out in the open. What an incredible opportunity for people to sort of learn how to do something that they previously didn't know how to do, and sort of start businesses and sort of innovate. And even if people have already existing businesses and have already launched products, to sort of get additional insight into it. I'm curious, like, do you know where this idea came from? And sort of like, what has been the experience so far for you, like interacting with people like, oh, thanks for showing me around that.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's interesting. I'd like to hear, you know, Greg Mercer, CEO, founder of Jungle Scout's thoughts on this. But from what I've heard just in passing is that, you know, the $1 million case study came about as him just trying to show that it's possible to launch a new product on Amazon. And like you said, go from 0 to 100 and relatively a short amount of time. And this is talking about private label too, which is typically a longer go-to-market schedule than maybe like wholesale or, you know, arbitrage or drop shipping would be. And to my knowledge, I mean, that was the genesis of the $1 million case. Mm-hmm. I just tried to teach people how to sell on Amazon, but also show them that it's possible. Anyone can do it, even on the side of your full-time jobs. So that's essentially what we're doing. We're publicly launching products on Amazon using our tool. And it's not just to show the capability of Jungle Scout. It's really just to show the capability of Amazon, but that it can be done with using one tool. And that's essentially what we're doing. We want to practice what we're preaching. We make a lot of how-to videos, like a lot of people do on whether it's YouTube or some other platform. However, this is more like a how we are doing this type of thing. And I think that's a lot easier for someone to follow. You're almost watching a reality show of someone going through the motions rather than you being explained to of how you can do it. So yeah, when you see somebody going through the process, the behind the scenes look really of like, why did they not pick that product? Or why did they think about that and not this? And you know, everybody's journey is different. So it's great to see just really what we're thinking about in the back end. It might not be the best way of doing it. It might not be the perfect way of doing it, but it's how we did it. And I think that's inspiring to a lot of people watching any or trying to learn any type of content or material, just seeing how other people do it.
Do you still think it's possible in 2024 to work a full-time job and launch a meaningful business on the side, maybe meaningful in the sense of it's definitely ROI positive for the person, so like the investment they got back and then some. Do you still think that's possible in 2024?
Definitely. And there's so many different business models that can help you achieve different goals. What we focus on primarily through our education, at least, is private label, where depending again on your goals, the path to ROI could be totally different. Like you could maybe achieve an ROI in the first few months. However, what we try to teach is play the long game and think about your Amazon business not as a get rich quick scheme and nothing that you're going to profit from and put in your pockets to spend on immediately. But at some point that will be the case. So with that sort of framework in mind and patience, if you can start a business now, similar to building a house, it's not going to happen right away. At some point you will have a valuable asset that you could continue making money from, or you can sell it one. You could sell the whole asset at some point. So yeah, I kind of like to always think about Amazon as a real estate play almost, or very similar to real estate. Is you could wholesale, you could play the short game, you could flip contracts, and you can get your ROI back pretty quickly, and you can make pretty good money doing that. Or if you want to make a life-changing amount of money one day, then if you play the long game by building your own asset, you could profit significantly from that or sell it to an investor. So I definitely think it's a worthwhile investment of your time and as well as your money. It's just not going to pay off right away depending on your business models and your goals. But certainly in a year or so, you can become profitable. In fact, we actually have some data from most Amazon sellers. Jonas Scott runs a survey each year called the State of the Amazon Seller, where essentially we interview a couple thousand Amazon sellers from all around the world, different business sizes. So we're looking at like enterprise businesses all the way down to like average Joe works 10 hours a week on his business. And we found that, I'm going to get the numbers wrong here, but in the ballpark, that it takes around 3 to 6 months to be profitable. So you might lose a little bit of money in your first 3 months just going to market, investing in product photography, and I guess aggressive ads and maybe a lower price point. But at some point, once you get enough reviews or you get enough sales acceleration where the algorithm is favoring you and search results, then you can turn the switch and become more profitable really quickly. So that's what we're seeing is sellers are becoming profitable within around the 3 to 6 month range.
What would you say is the biggest mistake that people make when they're starting an Amazon business in 2024 in private label? What's the biggest mistake that you generally see?
I think not knowing exactly what you're getting into is the biggest mistake. So what I mean by that very specifically is knowing your numbers or knowing sort of just like what it's going to take for you to be able to turn that switch, like I mentioned, from going to really aggressive on sales and maybe losing money to eventually turning profitable. So if you don't know the amount of demand in your business, if you don't know what people are searching for, if you don't know how long it's going to take to get to a certain review count or a certain organic keyword like threshold, then you're just going to be in the dark and just maybe you're in that like launch phase for way too long. But if you knew how long that launch phase took, then you could sort of mitigate your losses a little bit and you can slow down ad spend. You could be more careful with what keywords you're bidding on. But I think by far the biggest mistake is just not knowing how much demand there is in the market and just going blindly into it. I do have a friend, just a singular friend, but he's been very successful launching products without any type of data. But the one issue that he has is the launch phase. Like he can eventually become profitable. He can eventually do well because he's essentially just reselling his products to his existing customers. But like that launch phase for him is just such a hard time. And he often will launch like 20 products. I think he's launched about like 20 or 30 products now, but only 5 of them are still active ASINs on Amazon. So he's lost a lot of money. He's made a lot of money, but he has certainly like just kind of been guessing what products he's going to sell. And I think he'd be a lot more successful had he just, instead of maybe launching 20 products, launch like those 5 or 10 products that he knows are going to do well and not really have to go through that learning curve of, that's not a good product actually, but it was a good try. And he learned a lot. But I think that's what I would say is just don't go into any business dark.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to touch on sort of what's changed when it comes to launching a product in 2024. But before we do, can you sort of give a high-level overview of what the general steps are of launching an Amazon FBA product?
Yeah, very general, high-level steps, I would say, is first figure out the demand, like I just said. I won't harp on this for too much longer, but I think the biggest thing is demand. Just make sure people are actively buying that type of product on Amazon that you're considering. After you've figured that out and you kind of checkmark that, the next thing for me is, are you profitable? You know, I think you will figure that out later down the line once you get quotes back from suppliers. But to me, demand and profitability should just be like must-haves. You have to have those in order to be successful. And, you know, in 2024, especially, like Amazon's increasing fees around everything, like FBA storage costs are going up. They're now charging you for not sending in enough inventory into Amazon. They used to charge you only for long-term storage fees. Now they're charging you for short-term storage fees, where if you're not sending in enough inventory into Amazon and you're kind of like complicating their logistics for sending your inventory around warehouses, they're going to charge you more too. So because of this increased cost from selling on Amazon, specifically in with FBA, I would aim for profit margins that are at least 30% or more, bare minimum, pre-ads. And then with ads, hopefully you're still profitable, but I guess 30% profit margin would be my bare minimum there. And then the next thing for launching a product is, and I think we'll talk more about this, is just make a product that's better than the current products on the market. There's so much competition on Amazon in any niche. It's going to be very hard for you to find a high demand, low competition product that used to be possible a few years ago. Now you need to sort of differentiate your product in some capacity. It could be something simple like design, or it could hopefully be something more functional, like the actual functionality of the product, or just an improvement to the product in some way. So that, to me, I think are the three most important factors when launching a product: demand, profitability, and then differentiation, which really affects your competition and profitability levels as well.
So let's dig in a little bit deeper to sort of innovation. You know, I think one, you know, element that makes life really easy is really nailing down product market fit. So no matter what we're launching, building something that really fits in with customer needs and customer demands is often underrated, or it's often not talked about as much. Amazon marketing can be very technical. So in the Amazon marketing space, it's often focused on, it's like how to analyze your search terms more, how to, you know, analyze your competitors more, how to, you know, basically a bunch of Excel spreadsheets, right? It's like finding meaning in all the numbers, which is absolutely true. And then every once in a while, you know, you might meet just like your friend, right? Maybe he just nailed a particular product market fit and didn't even realize, and then created a product that some people generally liked. And then other times, you know, he didn't have data and maybe missed the mark on. So it's sort of like sometimes you see people waltz into really, really good product market fit. As sort of a data person myself, as sort of a very analytical person myself, anytime there's something creative, it almost seems a little ethereal to me. Like I need to systematize a way to do that creative work. One of my favorite episodes that we've ever done on the show was systematizing how to determine when your product title or your product image needs a refresh. And it was sort of like when these metrics are out of whack, you know how to go and do this creative task. So you don't really have to sit there and sort of scratch your head and be like, well, when do I do this creative thing? Like, how do I innovate? Do I just throw things at the wall? I think there's an interesting way to systematize this and actually get customer meaning, to get some signals on how to innovate a product, which I think is really neat. So talk to me a little bit about how that sort of has changed from the past, when maybe I think competition was lower, right? Like where maybe the bullseye was a little bit bigger to nail product market fit. And now there's like more competitors on the dartboard. So like the bullseye has gotten a little smaller. So being a little bit more strategic about how to actually create a product that people really want and not just like a me too product.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's, I think, to your point, is so much more important now. There's products that are being sold on Amazon where if you took away the brand name, they're the exact same product. They could even be coming from the exact same supplier. They could have the same exact cogs. And then it's just really hard to compete with anybody else because there's no way to be different. You've got to either outbid them with advertising or just, you know, play the long game and eventually outrank them on certain keywords organically. But The first part of that, which will always come first, is outranking them with ads is very, very expensive. I mean, ad costs are through the roof, and that could be what essentially tanks your product's profitability and maybe what makes you quit altogether. So, you know, through experience, I've launched a few products and have been with a few people who have launched products, and that has always been the one like question mark before launching the product is, what am I paying in ads? And you don't actually know that until you launch the product. There's no way to sort of ballpark. You could ballpark it, but you're not really going to be accurate until you actually do it. And so for me, I guess like what I'm trying to do when I launch a new product is mitigate those ad costs and a few other things. We're really just trying to mitigate my competition by truly launching a product that stands out because the product is different, not because my marketing is different or my photos are different. So a good example of that is, if you know, everybody on the market is selling a very thin alternative or a very small alternative, and you can clearly see through reading customer reviews on Amazon that people are begging for a bigger version, a thicker version, then that's an improvement right there that you can immediately go into, ask your supplier to triple the size, triple the thickness, and then right away when people get burnt on that first product, maybe they bought it and they go, oh, this looks so much bigger on screen. I didn't get to like touch and feel it like I would in store. I didn't realize how small it was. Now they're going to be looking specifically on Amazon. They're going to type in like thick product or big product, large product, whatever. And now you're going to be immediately separated from all those other sellers that are selling the smaller version. So that's essentially one idea of or example of what I'm really trying to think about more when we launch products. But with that Jungle Scout and me personally, just how can I stick out? How can I make that product stick out without needing to have the marketing to really do that for me? So the best way of doing that really on Amazon is by reading through customer reviews. And it sounds so simple, it sounds so obvious, but it's a gold mine. And Michael, like if you think about when was the last time you bought any type of product outside of Amazon, either in store or online, that you actually like gave feedback to a public form? Like it's, I can't imagine you've bought something, right? And you actually left your feedback.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that's coming up for me right now is like, anytime anyone launches anything, like we think of, like when we think of like mega large brands before they like come out with a TV show or like launch a new product, they do these like dedicated focus groups and they're like, let's gather up a whole bunch of customer feedback before we make any moves, right? It's like a vital part of, we think of like the way that big companies like get data. They're never launching something completely blind without pre-testing it first.
Yes.
And I think that's a really interesting thing that like the research has already been done. Like, what do you think of this product? Like, imagine you can go and just present your competitor products to people and be like, what do you think of this stuff? And then, you know, that's how we you know, this has been around for decades, right? Focus groups, like getting feedback from people. So I think that, you know, large companies have done it for decades, and the review insights that you can get from your competitors on Amazon is, you know, how has this not been part of the product launch process like, you know, a couple of years ago? So it's sort of like, it's kind of newish, I think. Amazon released the Product Opportunity Explorer, which has like some, which has review insights. So you're able to sort of get a summary there. And this is like a relatively new thing inside Amazon. So I think that, yeah, I think it's just going to become more and more vital to do.
It's free to do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's free. Like you said, focus groups, like you have to pay for focus groups. Those are expensive. I think that's going to be what most people or what a lot of people need to start thinking about a little bit more if they haven't already in the future when launching products. Actually, even when optimizing your products, you can get a lot of insights from competitors or really your own reviews and see like, how can I get out in front of certain preconceptions that people have about my type of product or my product in general. And you put those sort of right in front of them with like your images and your titles or your videos. So like what I did when I launched a product about a year and a half, 2 years ago now, I would say. And my biggest thing that I was just worried about was I bought all my competitors. I recorded me like kind of opening up their and using their products. And I immediately was like, okay, this product's all right. Like I like the idea of it, but there's one thing I just hate about it. And I want to fix that thing because I assume my opinions will be had by other people that are buying the product. And then when I dove into the reviews, it's a manual process. You can, you know, read them one by one on Amazon, or like you said, use the Opportunity Finder. And I took all those notes, brought them to my supplier, said, hey, we have to fix these two things first, because those are the first two things I notice and what a lot of people are noticing. And then I took those same notes, brought them to my product photographer and said, hey, these are the most important things I want to capture on my picture. So like my main image will be the main image, but image number 2, 3, and 4, these need to talk about these things that everyone's talking about. Because there's this preconception about my type of product that I want to get out in front of. And either it's for like a first time buyer that has these thoughts like, oh, is this going to break or is this going to do what I want it to? Or it's really actually targeting the person who got burnt. I always try to say this, but like as a consumer as well, I always get burnt by products and then I immediately go on Amazon to find the opposite of that product or the improved version of that product. So by having an image right in front of them, or it's in your title, some capacity of just showing that your product's not what they previously bought or is an improved version of that is so important. So essentially it's doing the same thing, but for product research and development, it's just trying to find those 2, 3, 4, however many things you can improve, bring them to your supplier and get it fixed. I think that's going to be like it just more stress. I think a lot of people have been doing it, but it's going to be more stress going forward to stand out. But also it's going to be easier with tools like Jungle Scout, Seller Central, and other tools that can dig through and give you an analysis of a bunch of different reviews.
Yeah, and it's amazing. I think it's another source of information, even when we think to bring it back to like technical marketing, when you take those review insights and it can actually inform things that you do on your product page or maybe the things that you put into your A+ content. For example, if you find out that a lot of positive reviews relate to, you know, maybe you're doing a kitchenware and it's a good for cooking soup in it. You know, you can have that can inspire some product photography, that can inspire some of the content that you make on your pages. You know, if it's durable, if you're seeing reviews that people, you know, really like the durability of your particular product, you can potentially take that and insert that into, you know, your keyword strategy or your content on your page, things like that. So yeah, so it's sort of another source of information outside of a keyword research tool to sort of get more insight, and it allows you to sort of, number one, focus on things that people like about your product and things that they didn't like about competitor products.
Yeah, exactly.
It's an easy way to innovate.
Yeah, and you do that research once, you know, you do it with multiple ASINs or multiple categories, but then that stays with you forever. Like you said, you use it for product development, use it for product images, use it for your listing copy, videos, advertising, keywords, or your display ad photos. Like, if someone's very clearly saying something or a bunch of people are saying something in the reviews, then just make an ad for that person. Like, put them in the image, put them their problem in the title or the copy of that ad, and speak to them directly. It's one of the best ways to just get out in front of somebody, get them to click your product or really improve your click-through rate on both the listing and your ads as well. So yeah, so powerful. You have to do it once, but it can play in so many different areas of your product.
Tell me what comes up for people when they do this analysis, when they first do it, like what is the general first reaction that they have? Like, I guess the question is like, what steps should be taken when someone's trying to launch a product and they do a review analysis? Give me like bullet points 1, 2, 3, like what do we do next?
Sorry. So like, what do you, like the process of doing it or what to do after you get the reviews?
Yeah, I guess the interesting thing is like you do this analysis, you find out sort of what people are looking for what people were dissatisfied with. And then like the one thing you mentioned was communicate with your supplier. And are you also using that in like keyword strategy for like PPC campaigns?
Yes. So yeah, what I'm doing is when I get these customer review insights, I'm basically saying, looking at like, okay, what are most people saying? Sort of like ranking the issues or the challenges that people have. And that gives me like a structure of, okay, I need to get this thing worked on first, this is the most important thing, this is the second most important thing, and so on. So then, yeah, I'm taking those notes, telling my supplier that, hey, we have to at least fix this first thing that everyone's talking about, and hopefully we can fix this second thing. Taking to my product photographer saying, we need to show these in the images. And then at that point, yes, I'm basically just like taking those phrases, like let's say someone says it's too weak, and what a keyword research tool like Jungle Scout will show you is what are similar terms that people are using to buy that type of product. So again, maybe another example of like people are saying it's not durable, then I'll type in durable pee pad and see what are those high volume keywords that people are actually using to buy that product. It's really just sort of like wordsmithing the issue, if that makes sense, like figuring out the core issue and then trying to find the keywords that people are using to solve that issue.
Awesome. So awesome. So I feel like I like to leave people with actionable things to do. So I think we've got our actionable steps here. And I also like, you know, continued evolution, continued improvement, because it's competitive out there. So sort of using reviews as a way to innovate individual products. Because I've definitely talked to people before that have scoured their search terms to try to find new ideas to innovate their products. And now this is sort of another source of information that you can analyze.
Absolutely.
So awesome, Jake. I think we've done it.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for coming back on the show. It's always an absolute pleasure. Enjoy this. We're having a very nice, warm-ish winter. Hopefully we have no freezes.
Yeah.
And hopefully Austin doesn't shut down for a week.
Yeah, hopefully. This is a great winter so far, but hopefully it keeps going. But thanks, Mike, so much for having me on. I always enjoy being on the podcast. We'll have to do something in person one day that we're so close to each other.
Yeah. And of course, you know, it's fairly obvious, but where can people find out more about you and what it is that you do?
Yeah, you can head over to junglescout.com for more information about Jungle Scout. Our YouTube channel, Jungle Scout, has a bunch of great free information or education that you could follow. Our $1 million case study series that I referenced throughout this video is going to be launching this year. So if you want to see how to launch a new product or how we're going to launch a new product, highly recommend checking that out. And when is this being updated, actually, or uploaded?
This will probably go out late January.
Late January? Okay, you should check the website because we should have some deals. If you're interested in Jungle Scout, we should have some deals still going on. Forget when those end, but those will end pretty shortly after this airs. But other than that, yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn and Instagram. But other than that, yeah, that's where you can find Jake Zeratsian and Jungle Scout.
Awesome, Jake. Have a good one. Thanks so much. And everyone else, I'll see you next week here on the PBC Den Podcast.